This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and boy, what an election last night. That was a wild and crazy ride. There's some very strange things going on, and I'd like to put a shout-out right now to our callers in Texas, which would probably mostly be people who are listening to us live right now on Sirius Satellite Radio, I am reading on some blogs that there are a lot of Republicans who are calling into talk shows across Texas right now, have been this morning and were late yesterday afternoon and evening, complaining that they were disenfranchised, complaining that when they showed up at the polls and, as Rush Limbaugh asked them to do, said that they were there to vote for Hillary Clinton. They were given a Democratic ballot, and they went in to vote, and they voted for Hillary Clinton. And then they discovered, much to their horror, that they were not able to vote for any of the statewide Republican candidates because it was just a Democratic ballot. And so there's a lot of, shall we say, buyer's remorse or angry Republicans who are, well, you didn't tell me I wouldn't be able to vote for any other Republicans. And they're claiming that they were disenfranchised. And this morning I was on Fox and Friends. And what was interesting is just before I came on, the host of the show said, if you lived in Texas and if you crossed over and voted for Hillary Clinton as a consequence of Rush Limbaugh's appearance on Fox, you know, on the Bill O'Reilly show, Bill O'Reilly's Factor with Laura Ingraham. This was the exchange.
Rush, I understand that the Rush Limbaugh audience is mobilizing in Texas for Hillary. Am I hearing that right?
I don't know if the audience is mobilizing or not. I am urging people, I'm using a phrase to Republicans. I mean, our nominee's chosen. It's John McCain. Texas is open. I want Hillary to stay in this, Laura. This is too good a soap opera. We need Barack Obama bloodied up politically, and it's obvious that the Republicans are not going
to
do it.
And then he even goes on to say that he's getting memos, all the right-wing talk show hosts are getting memos from the RNC saying don't go after Obama.
And don't have the stomach for it, as you probably know. But we're getting all kinds of memos from the RNC saying we're not going to be critical there. Mark McKinnon of McCain's campaign says he'll quit if they get critical of Obama. This is the presidency of the United States we're talking about. I want our party to win. I want the Democrats to lose. They're in the midst of tearing themselves apart right now. It is fascinating to watch, and it's all going to stop if Hillary loses.
Which is absolutely right. If Hillary had lost last night, then pretty much that would be it, as Bill Clinton had said. And now it's continuing. And so Limbaugh wraps this up with Laura Ingraham.
So, yeah, I'm asking people to cross over, and if they can stomach it. I know it's a difficult thing to do to vote for a Clinton, but it will sustain this soap opera, and it's something I think we need. It'd be fun, too.
So, anyhow, I was on Fox this morning, and the host said, you know, if you're a Republican in Texas and you did what Limbaugh said, please let us know. And in the 14 minutes before I went on the air, they got 1,200 emails from Republicans saying, yep, I did that, which is totally weird. Texas broke the pattern of independents voting for Barack Obama last night. Independents pretty much 50-50 voting for Hillary Clinton. You know, her independent numbers went up dramatically. And I'm not, you know, I was willing to totally write off any conspiracy theory aspect of this until this morning on Fox News. As I'm sitting there as a guest along with Michael Reagan, and they're talking about this and making a big deal out of it. And I'm like, whoa. You know, I think, you know, to the extent that Hillary Clinton won these three states, she won them fair and square by basically going negative on Obama. And there's a lot of political math going into this, which we'll discuss as we go on throughout the day. And also some serious decisions now that have to be made by the Democratic National Committee about what they're going to do. Because at this point, neither candidate can win without the superdelegates. And frankly, I think that Susie Turnbull is going to drop by, our old friend, the vice chair of the DNC, and because they have to figure out what they're going to do about Michigan and Florida. David Sirota is on the line with us. David is the author, columnist, journalist. His latest column, it's also The Congress Stupid, is in the current issue of In These Times Online. He's got a new book out due in May 08, The Uprising, an Unauthorized Tour of the Populist Revolt, Scaring Wall Street and Washington. His website, davidsirota.com. Great guy. And David, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
It is always a pleasure to have you on, David. Before we get into your it's also the Congress Stupid, and frankly, I thought your piece on Fareed Zakaria was brilliant, and I wanted to talk to you about that as well. Your take on what happened last night?
Well, I think that Texas was basically a tie. Ohio went the way I think a lot of people thought Ohio would go. I think for people who want to see real change, what disturbs me, and it doesn't matter really which candidate you're for, what I think is disturbing about the results is that I think the Clinton campaign will take it as a ratification of the tactics she employed. I'm not just talking about the negative tactics. What I'm talking about is the rhetoric that she used on something like NAFTA. She has been running around Ohio saying that she has always been a critic of NAFTA. She's been a critic of NAFTA since the beginning. And I think that well, first of all, I know that that's not true. I mean, we know that that's not true. There's a whole public record of her giving speeches endorsing NAFTA, saying it's a great shining success over the last 10 years. And I worry that having won that state on that message, her campaign will see it as a ratification of continuing to lie about that. And ultimately, when we allow those lies, when an electorate ratifies those lies, it can have very serious consequences for public policy. I mean, if lies about NAFTA, how it was passed, what happened when it was passed, are allowed to go unanswered and propel a candidate, it's going to be very difficult to reform NAFTA, you know, after this election happens.
Why? I mean, if speaking for myself, I don't mind if a candidate changes their opinion as a result of public policy. That's the way it's supposed to work.
I have no problem with a candidate changing their position. What I have a problem with is a candidate not admitting that they originally had that position and saying that they never had a position that they once had. That kind of dishonesty, I think, is really troubling because what can happen, and I want to remind you of a very specific example, what can happen with that kind of thing is that means that that kind of candidate can say something on that issue and turn right around with no problem at all and do something exactly opposite. Remember, it was Bill Clinton who said he's not going to push NAFTA in 1992. He said, this is a candidate. I'm not going to push NAFTA until Mexico raises its wages and environmental standards. And then less than a year later, as president, he pushed NAFTA through. So I am concerned about a candidate who, not that she says she's against NAFTA now, is that a candidate who says, I was never for NAFTA, when for the last 10 years she's been citing it as a great success.
Right. The minimum wage in Mexico right now is 50 cents an hour,
something like that. That's
right. It's in that neighborhood. And so, you know, wage standards, that's their minimum wage. If their minimum wage is to go to $2 an hour, are we supposed to be happy? I mean, it's what does, you know, putting wage standards and environmental protections in, what does that mean?
It's hard to know what that means. It can mean a bunch of different things. I mean, look, what I'm disturbed about, and I'm writing this in my next column, which is about how we have this moment right now to really, really discuss globalization and trade. The public obviously wants that discussion. Polls show that, you know, polls show the public is opposed to our current trade policy and understands that our trade policy is intimately involved in our economic troubles. And what I worry about is the fact that you're right, that we're having a totally vapid debate about it. That one candidate can claim she was never ever for it in the first place. We're throwing around terms like wage and environmental standards. We're not really analyzing how to actually implement that. I mean, remember, it was 1993 that Ross Perot, who, you know, as controversial as he was forcing a discussion about what he called a social tariff, you know,
right,
a sliding tariff that depending on the wage levels of another country would slide up and down. We're not having a discussion like that at all right now.
That's right. And his talking about the giant sucking sound and all that stuff and his charts and tables and his funny big ears, and the guy was right. You know, he was caricatured and he was lampooned, but he got 18% of the vote, as I recall, and he was right.
He was right, and again, We have a moment right now to actually have these debates. The problem is that we've got, I think we've got a media that doesn't want to discuss these issues.
We've got a media that is owned by corporations who are making out like bandits as a direct result of these kinds of deals. David, can you stick around for the next segment? I would like to wrap up some of this stuff
with you.
Okay, hang on. We got to take a break here. It's 16 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America. Our number, 866-303-2270. We'll be taking your calls after this. And also, if you want to drop into our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com or AirAmerica.com into the Tom Hartman page.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
Well, I can stand beside ideals I think are right, and I can stand beside the ideas stand and fight. I do believe there's a dream for everyone. This is our country.
Tom Hartman Program, brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans, because keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. You are right here, the home of Labor's Radio. 21 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman with you. And speaking of labor, Fareed Zakaria, Newsweek, we're talking with David Sirota. We are talking with David Sirota. DavidSirota.com is website. And David, you really went off on Fareed here in this column, Free Trade and the Expertise of Fareed Zakaria. He always seems like such a nice guy on television.
Yeah, well, a lot of these what I would call free trade fundamentalists and zealots seem like nice people. But I think that they're deliberately dishonest or stupid, or maybe both. Zakaria, the central argument in his piece is that farmers, struggling farmers in places like Africa and the developing world, are desperate for more NAFTA-style trade agreements, which is,
in other words, they want to be able to sell their produce to me,
right? Exactly.
To you and me.
Which again, if you're an expert, it either means that you're stupid or being deliberately dishonest when you make a claim like that. Because
I've been in a lot of these third world countries and I've seen a lot of these subsistence farmers, and they're not interested in selling their stuff to you or me. They're interested in feeding their families,
or at the most,
selling it in a local community market.
That's exactly right. And even if they are interested in selling to you or me, they understand that when these trade deals are passed, what ends up happening is that these trade deals allow taxpayer subsidies to huge multinational agribusiness to undersell their products and put them out of business. There's a great movie called Life and Debt, if anybody's ever seen that, about what happens under free trade to farmers, what happened to farmers in Jamaica when this kind of thing happens. And this is why, of course, Mexican and Peruvian farmers are in the process of mass protests over the last couple weeks. NAFTA's the final NAFTA implementation happened a couple weeks ago, and now the implementation of the Peru Free Trade Agreement is happening, and farmers down in those countries are mass protesting. So they understand that these trade deals are not free trade deals. They're rigged trade deals. These subsidies rig the market. And again, these subsidies are not going to even American small family farmers. These subsidies are directed to the ADMs and the corporate agriculture behemoth.
Probably about three dozen big transnational corporations that worldwide that are benefiting massively from such trade deals. Arguably, maybe 100 or 200.
If
you include the WTO.
That's exactly right. And the bottom line here is that when you hear pundits and neoconservative pundits like Fareed Zakaria wrap their advocacy of our current trade policy in the language of altruism, a red flag should go off in your mind. I mean, this is a classic example where you have a media elite saying that, oh no, I'm for free trade because I want to help poor farmers in the developing world, when in fact every shred of evidence that we have shows that when these trade deals pass, those farmers don't like it, and those farmers don't like it because they know those trade deals are rigged to put them out of business.
Now, we have both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama going off after NAFTA which I've been saying is just a pittance. It's a drop in the ocean. The big one is the WTO and GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, and they're not going anywhere near that. And these unilateral or you know, one-on-one bilateral trade deals like with China and things like this, the most favored nation status, this whole spectrum of things that basically, I mean, more than half of all world trade, in quotes, international trade, is actually within individual companies. You know,
in other words,
it's outsourcing of jobs. It's a company that used to be in the United States building a factory in China so that it can make things there and ship it back to the United States and sell it under its own brand name. It's simply arbitrage of labor. And neither of these candidates are talking about the larger issues at all, A. But B, John McCain is gung-ho for not just, you know, WTO and GATT, but he even thinks NAFTA is a wonderful thing.
Right.
I mean, it looks like it's not the perfect choice that we have here, but at least there's some choice.
Yeah, and I think that NAFTA has become shorthand for many of these trade issues. And I think that granted, we're starting from pretty far behind here in terms of, you're right, the major problem is the WTO and the overall trading system. But I think it's a big leap forward that we're actually, that these issues are at least taking center stage in the political arena. And that at least some at least the Democratic candidates are saying NAFTA is not okay. Now look, you know, the NAFTA model, which is the model for many other of these bilateral trade agreements, the NAFTA model itself is fundamentally corrupt. And I would say maybe the NAFTA agreement itself is not that big, but that model.
Right, and that's being propagated all over the place. And last night, the exit polls, only 8% of Democrats in Ohio said that they thought that NAFTA was a good thing. And now we have, you know, two candidates who are trying to outcompete who hates NAFTA the most, and arguably the stuff being leaked back from the right-wing government in Canada about Obama might have been the thing that hurt him the most in Ohio.
Absolutely.
So, anyhow, we'll see how it all shakes out. David Sirota, davidsirota.com. Check it out. David, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be taking your calls on Texas and other issues right after this break. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I took a walk in the rain one day on the wrong side of the track. I stood on the rail till I saw that train, just to see how my heart would react. Now some people say that you shouldn't tempt fate, and for them I cannot disagree. But I never learned nothing from playing it safe. I say fate should not tempt me. I take my chances.
Working without a net, live radio here, 34 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program. If negative campaigning helps you win, if the Obama campaign looks at the Clinton campaign and says, okay, she came after us about NAFTA, perhaps she came after us. Frankly, my opinion is that this is something that came out of the Bush Rove White House and was orchestrated with the Canadian Prime Minister's office. I mean, this, you know, let's... Again, I'll say it. The Republicans, I hear you had Limbaugh and all these other Republicans saying that they very much wanted Hillary Clinton to win. Now, that is not to say that Hillary Clinton wouldn't make a great candidate and might not easily be able to beat John McCain. It may be that they're going to get what they wished for and wish that they didn't get it. Keep in mind, a lot of Democrats sat around with Ronald Reagan and said, oh, yeah, we'd love to have Ronald Reagan as a candidate. He'd be easy to beat. What are you talking about? B actor, who, you know, et cetera. So be careful what you wish for. But nonetheless, NAFTA, there was this NAFTA slam on Obama in Ohio that he didn't really mean what he was saying. Turns out it wasn't the case, but nonetheless, that was the slam. Hillary Clinton not immediately being outraged when she was asked in 60 Minutes whether or not Obama was a Muslim. The 3 a.m. ad. And then Hillary Clinton's comment that Obama doesn't have a lifetime of experience, he merely has a speech. So is the Obama campaign going to look at this and say, maybe we should go negative? And if they do, is that going to destroy his image as the knight in shining armor? And then the question is it important to begin shedding that image? Because when he goes up against John McCain, he's going to have to start slugging. And in fact, if Hillary Clinton won these two states as a consequence of going negative and slamming her opponent, isn't that what you want? Isn't that what we all want in a candidate? Somebody who can take on the opposition and who is not afraid to do so? Or do we say, yeah, but not during the primary, except that it always happens during primary. So, you know, it's like there's so many different ways to look at this thing. It's a tough one. Jack in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Jack, what's on your mind today?
Well, first of all, Tom, it's good to have a chance to talk with America's most intellectual talk show host. Every program, you redeem the genre.
Thank you.
You know, these Republicans down here who are whining prove that Lincoln was right. You can fool some of the people all of the time.
So it's a fact, Jack, that there are Republicans calling in to right-wing talk show hosts to show hosts in Texas right now. I guess in any case, right now, complaining about the fact that when they showed up to vote for Hillary Clinton, like Rush Limbaugh told them to, they then discovered after they had voted for her that every other choice on the ballot, because it was just a Democratic ballot that they had, was a Democrat, and they couldn't vote the down tickets, the candidates that they wanted.
Texas is a closed primary state. If you go to the polling place and you say you want to vote in the Democratic primary, that's the only ballot you get. If I'm a Democrat and I go to the Republican primary and I say I want to vote in the Republican primary, it's only going to be Republicans on the ballot.
Right.
This is not an open primary state. It never has been. And these guys obviously were sleeping through civics class or history class if they went to school here in Texas.
Yeah.
And they talked about that.
Well, it is an open primary state in as much as you can choose, regardless of your party affiliation or how you're registered, to vote
right.
in either primary. Most
right.
states that are truly closed, if you're registered as a Democrat, you can only vote in the Democratic primary, and the same for the Republicans. And some truly open primary states, well, actually, what you're describing is actually an open primary state. Yeah, So you're finding that there actually are people in Texas who did follow Limbaugh's advice, and they are upset about it.
Got no reason to be. If they'd have just taken a little time or stayed awake in school, they would have learned what the rules are in the state of Texas.
Yeah, it's great. Jack, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening there in Dallas. Appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Tom in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Tom.
Well, good morning, Tom. Pleasure to speak with you. A real simple solution to the Democratic delegate issue is we have not reduced the amount of delegates to win the nomination by the amount of delegates that have been removed from the contest in Michigan and Florida.
Right, and this is why we're going to get Susie Turnbull on in the next hour, and I am strongly calling on Howard Dean to immediately call for voter-based caucuses, not the kind of caucus where you stand in the room and say, you know, let's have a discussion, but the kind of caucus where it looks like a primary. You simply go in and vote in Michigan and Florida so that the voters of those two states will actually have a say in this election.
Wouldn't that just disenfranchise the process of the states coming in under the DNC's rules? Now we're allowing the states that did not participate with the DNC to be the ones that are ultimately going to decide the election.
I know, but it's better than the superdelegates being the ones who decide the election. At least there is, if not the reality, the appearance, and I would argue that there's a good chunk of reality as well, to the concept on the part of Democrats that the voters actually decided who the nominee is going to be.
I agree that if the superdelegates remove it from the popular vote, then we're almost handing the election to McCain because of our inability to rally under one banner.
Yeah, and that's a problem. Well said, Tom. Thank you very much. Haley in Austin, Texas. Hey, Haley.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm actually listening to you online.
Mm-hmm.
Because you said most people get you on Sirius here. I'm sure you know we recently lost our Air America state in Austin, and we're back. I sure hope we've got you airing here. They've been glad to get to know you online.
Well, thank you, Haley.
So yesterday was my first election in Texas. I'm a transplant. I'm not sure I want to ever actually get to become a Texan, but I'm naturalizing. So it was interesting to show up in the morning and vote and then have to come back at night to do the caucus.
Right.
But I was pretty confused about the difference in outcome between the two. And I didn't realize so many Republicans were crossing over, but that sure makes a lot of sense. But I have to say, one of the things I noted, it took about 3 hours to get through the caucus last night, but there were certainly Obama people there who were concerned that there might be Hillary people coming over and trying to get the seats that we had to send to the county convention. Mm-hmm. So they did want to make sure that everybody was checked to make sure that when they signed in for Obama before they were elected to serve as delegates or alternates from the Obama camp. It was interesting. There was tension in the room.
Interesting. But there weren't Republicans in the room.
No, you know, actually, it was kind of interesting yesterday. I guess the Republican Party in Texas, from what I understood, does not have a caucus system. It's just the Democrats.
Right. So in the primary, in the actual voting yesterday, where Limbaugh told all of the Republicans in Texas, said, "Hey, McCain's got it. Don't worry about it. Just go in and vote for Hillary Clinton, because we want the party, the Democratic Party, to waste another $50, $60, $70 million between now and 7 weeks from now when the Pennsylvania primary happens." That might account for the fact that Hillary Clinton won the primary but lost the caucus. Or it may just be that, as has been the case in so many states, she wins primaries and he wins caucuses.
Well, it's certainly an interesting question, but that was my thought when I heard you announce that earlier.
Yeah, interesting. Haley, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate the call. I just thought it was a joke. I mean, people are going to listen to Rush Limbaugh and show up and vote? I mean, you know, for the other side, come on, give me a break. And then I was on Fox News this morning, and they were seriously talking about it. And they said that in the 14 minutes before I went on the air, when they first raised the question, and I wasn't on to talk about that topic. I mean, this is what was happening around me. This was the topic of the hour on Fox News from what was here at Pacific time, 5 to 6 a.m. What would have been, 8 to 9 a.m., I guess, East Coast time. The topic was, how many of you guys in Texas voted for, who are Republicans, listened to Limbaugh and voted for Hillary Clinton? And Lori, I'm forgetting her name, her last name, the host of the show, said that in the 14 minutes before I went on the air, when they first asked the question, they'd gotten 1,200 emails. Lori Dew, says Sean, thank you. That's what I thought. And then I thought, no, I can't. Yeah. Said that they had gotten 1,200 emails and was asking for more. So, you know, we're going to have to check the newshounds.us folks and see if they're on this, if they've been watching Fox News this morning and all that sort of thing. 866-303-2270. Andre in Manhattan. Hey, Andre, what's up?
Yes, thank you for the wonderful and educational show that you have.
You're welcome.
And I would like to say that it's mind-boggling that I hear people voicing the opinion that are Democrats that if their particular candidate doesn't win, they're going to vote for McCain.
I agree. It's tragic.
It's just totally irrational. And when I hear people calling in, nitpicking candidates on issues that are not important, that just falls in the Republicans and conservatives' hands.
Yeah, you know, I absolutely agree with you, Andre, and you said it brilliantly. And in fact, let me take it a step beyond that. Let me suggest to the Obama and Clinton camps that instead of going after each other, the competition that we, the voters, would like to see. You know, I live here in Portland, Oregon. My primary is going to be the first week of May, if I recall correctly. It's going to be in May anyway. And the battle that I would like to see you guys have, Hillary and Barack, the battle that I'd like to see you two have to get my vote is which one of you can mount a stronger campaign against John McCain. Both of you, right now, start attacking John McCain. Start aggressively going after John McCain. Start outing John McCain for the fact that he's got some 50 lobbyists working on his campaign, that he's the most lobbyist candidate ever, that he's taken all kinds of money from lobbyists, that he's not the straight-talking guy. Convince me of that. 45 minutes past
the Tom Hartman Program, taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day.
5 days a week.
Let me say thank you to those who love many. Let me say thank you to those who still play fair.
Shall the meek inherit, or the above the fray, shall we say? 611 delegates up for grabs in the remaining 12 contests. This is a summary from ABC News. ABC News' current delegate estimate has Obama at 1,555. That means in order to hit 2024 to secure the nomination, he'd have to get 77% of all the remaining pledged delegates to hit the magic number. Pretty unlikely. On the other hand, Hillary Clinton would need 94% of all the remaining delegates to hit the magic number 2024. Even more unlikely. So what are we going to do? By the way, well, I thought it was so odd last night. It suddenly hit me when John McCain was doing his acceptance speech in front of that giant sign that said John McCain 1191. I thought, okay, did the Republican Party decide before or after 9/11 that the number of delegates needed to win the Republican nomination was 1191? Because I'm just looking at these numbers going, this is like subliminal messaging. This is so weird. Or was it just one of those eerie coincidences, you know, like Kennedy's secretary was named Lincoln and Lincoln's secretary was named Kennedy kind of thing, you know. I don't know, but I thought it was fascinating. 866-303-2270, and Tom in Clinton, Washington. Yeah, FISA, the House is voting on this. Tom, give us your rant on it.
Yeah, Tom, I'm really concerned that the House is getting ready to... Sounds like they may get ready to cave in on FISA,
yeah.
And I'd really like to encourage your listeners to contact their representatives and let
yes.
them know what they think.
Go to callcongress.org and get the toll-free numbers and call your member of the House of Representatives. If you don't know, just tell them your zip code. They'll tell you who represents you. Here's what I think is going on with
Tom,
this, Tom. Yeah.
Tom, to add to that, if I can, we have a website that has an easy mechanism for contacting your representatives. That's at futureselector.org.
Okay.
And it's all set up for this particular issue and several others.
Great. Although, you know, let me warn you, I know a few members of Congress, and when they get more than one email that's identical, when they get mass numbers of emails, they tend to ignore them. They do not ignore telephone calls.
No, this site allows you to customize your own email and send it to them.
Okay. All right. Well, that's great, and that's a great start. Tom, thanks a lot for the call and the heads up. What I think is going on with this is that these telecom companies, they have so many lawyers. Literally since the beginning of telephony, however you say it, ever since the beginning of the telephone industry, there have been attempts and there have been successes at legislative oversight to avoid invasions of privacy. The telephone companies for 100 years nearly, the telephone companies have been had a zillion lawyers and been hyper conscious of the laws regarding what is a legal and an illegal wiretap. And I do not believe that any of these phone companies said okay to the Bush administration, fine, we'll break the law, period, end of sentence. I think the ones that said yes because the Bush administration gave them some specific assurance that they would be protected. And I think the Bush administration did this off the books and illegally. And the phone companies, I don't think, are worried about this at all, because at the end of the day, if they don't get the protection, they'll simply pull out the piece of paper. Their lawyers have got this stuff nailed down. They're no dummies. I mean, we're talking huge law firms and huge law departments that have been dealing with the nuance of this kind of law forever. They will simply pull out the paper and say, see, George Bush told us it was okay. Sue him. And so when the Republicans and Bush are running around going, oh, FISA, we've got to protect the phone companies. Oh, they're trying to protect America. That's all. Just protect the phone. What he's trying to do is protect his own butt. This is the Protect the Bush Administration Act. And that's why it's so important that the Democrats say no. And that also that the Democrats start asking the question, by the way, while you were listening to everybody's phone calls, were you listening to Ted Kennedy's phone calls? Were you listening to Russ Feingold's phone calls? Were you listening to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's phone calls? Because Nixon did. And we know that Orrin Hatch's staff had hacked into Ted Kennedy's computer for over a year and was feeding that information to the Republicans who are arguing on the Senate Judiciary Committee. I mean, the Republicans have a long history of this. Anyhow, Bruce in Houston. Hey, Bruce, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to call and let you know I have two neighbors that voted for Hillary yesterday. They're Republicans. And I think they knew that they were going to, you know, the getting a Democratic ballot.
That they get stuck with a Democratic ballot. But they were both Republicans who are will be supporting McCain in the ultimate election, but they voted for Hillary yesterday.
I suppose so, although I'm not entirely sure of that.
Well, is it possible that they simply have decided to jump ship from the Republican Party?
I'm not sure. It's hard to say. I think they're sitting on the fence.
I see.
And could probably go either way. But what we did is we went ahead and got a Republican ballot and voted for Huckleberry in the morning, and then went back in the evening and at the caucus and voted for. Actually, my partner and I ended up canceling each other out by accident. I voted for Hillary and he voted for Obama.
Yeah. But that's interesting because, you know, Marcos in the Daily Kos, I think it was the Michigan primary, was recommending that Democrats vote for Mitt Romney so that he would have another few months of lifetime because he was spending all his money on attack ads beating up various Republican candidates money out of his own pockets. And so, you know, it's not like this is a new trick, and it's not like the Democrats have never done it or people associated with the Democrat. Well, Marcos is not associated with the Democratic Party, but liberals have never done it.
I completely agree with what you said a few minutes ago. I mean, I think that Hillary or Obama, it doesn't matter as long as they don't destroy each other in the process of getting there. And if
that's my concern. That's my concern, is that they both need to start running against John McCain instead of against each other, and let us figure out which one's going to do a better job of opposing John McCain in the general election. That's the bottom line. That's where they need to go. Because really, ultimately, the Supreme Court is at stake here. There is nothing more important in my mind right now than the Supreme Court. And I tell you, Rush Limbaugh is thinking the exact same thing. 57 minutes past the hour. Coming up, Susie Turnbull from the DNC, right after this.
Tom Hartman. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back. Here we are live, coast to coast, Los Angeles to New York, San Francisco to Pittsburgh, and all places in between the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And Susan Turnbull is with us. She is the vice chair of the DNC. And Susan, great to have you back with us.
Great to be with you, Tom.
I think the last time we sat together was in New Hampshire, right after that primary.
Right, face to face.
Yeah, and here we are right after another big primary event. And what's the Democratic National Committee going to do now, in particular, about Florida and Michigan? Because it seems like, recalibrate me if I'm wrong on this, it seems to me that if you folks don't put together a caucus that looks like a primary, in other words, a voting caucus as opposed to a stand-around-and-talk caucus, in both of those states immediately, that will have, you know, force and actually be considered, then the perception, no matter what the reality is, the perception, unless one of these candidates, you know, just backs out, which I think is unlikely, the perception is going to be on the part of the voters that, you know, folks in smoke-filled rooms made the superdelegates made the decisions, and, you know, why bother to vote, and you're going to have a whole lot of very people feeling very disenfranchised and upset.
Right. I mean, I think, Tom, basically all of us have to take a little deep breath here. We had four primaries last night, and the caucus counting is still underway in Texas, so we don't know quite actually what the results are going to be. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is that there is not one person at the DNC, on the DNC, I think, who really would look forward to an opportunity where anybody would feel disenfranchised, whether it be people in Michigan or Florida or anywhere else in this country. So we've got a series of primaries that are still coming up, starting this weekend in Wyoming. There's about 5 million people who are still out there that need to be able to cast their vote. But in the meantime, I think it is going to be the case that efforts will be made so that no one feels as if, number one, their vote doesn't count, or number two, that every vote isn't going to be counted.
Yeah, I mean, we're on the air right now, and for example, in Detroit, Ann Arbor, and Grand Rapids, in Michigan voters are really upset. I mean, calling into the show, very upset because...
I mean,
there was, you know, only half the candidates were on their ballot.
Exactly. I mean, one of the, so you can't, only half the candidate, not even half, two candidates were on the ballot in, I think, in Michigan. And one of them was Dennis Kucinich, who is no longer in the race. And so you can't really look at that as being a reasonable situation. No delegates were elected in the Michigan, in the Michigan primary. And they broke the rules. And I realize that, you know, there's rules and there's rules, but I sort of describe it, and I don't know if this is right, but you look at it and you go, you say to your kids, kids, you have to eat your vegetables before you get dessert. And then dessert comes around, and your kid looks at you and says, okay, I want dessert, and they haven't eaten their vegetables. And then you go, okay, well, that's okay. I don't care.
But what if it's the neighbor's kid who is, like, secretly shoveling you know, the dessert under the table to your kid? I mean, in my understanding is that in Florida, the decision to position the primary in time when it was made by Republicans, not Democrats. And so the Democrats, you know, being part of the state, broke the rules, but it was Republicans who were pushing this. And I've heard that there were Republicans in, you know, I understand that Republicans in Michigan also had a lot of input in this process. And it wasn't just the Democratic Party in Michigan saying, okay, I double dare you, that these were states making these decisions, and the states are both parties.
Right. And now, in fact, in the state decision, and in both cases, there were efforts made to talk to the parties and say, can we have a party process that will allow people to participate, that will meet, follow the rules and get things done. And I think that, in fact, that is an option, and I know, in fact, that was an option that was made to Michigan and Florida. And the parties turned down that option. So the question is, how do we move ahead from here?
Yeah.
And clearly, what we want to do is make sure that it's a fair process. We want to make sure that everyone feels as if that is that my vote as a superdelegate is equivalent, is no more, or should have no more weight than someone that where a vote has been cast by thousands of people to elect a delegate.
Right.
I
want your vote as a superdelegate, frankly, to have more weight than the vote of, you know, somebody who has just jumped into the party for the first time in their life and may jump out a week later. I think that there is something to be said for this is a club and we want some percentage, and I think 20% is not unreasonable, some percentage of the members of the club to have a little more say in the future of the club because they've given their lives to it and they've committed themselves to it, and most of them are answerable to people because they were elected to their positions. So, you know, I'm not opposed to superdelegates having, you know, more of a vote than I do. But
Tom, I really appreciate your comment, because I'm someone in particular who feels as if I have paid my dues over years and years with this party, and that's why I'm a superdelegate to begin with.
Yeah.
The reason I'm a superdelegate is because I'm a member of the Democratic National Committee, and I ran for election as a DNC member a number of times. I have done everything like stand at on street corners, passing out literature, knock down doors, do phone banks, and most, if not all, of the Democratic National Committee members are just like me from that standpoint.
Yeah, and I think that's a healthy ballast for the ship of the party, shall we say.
Exactly, and I'm glad, and the whole notion of it being insiders in smoke-filled rooms, that's not going to happen. I mean, I really believe that this has got to be and will be an instance where people recognize that the future not only of the party, but the future of our nation really is dependent on this, because we cannot afford a third Bush term. And I think with John McCain, that's what we'd be getting.
Well, and I think we can't afford another 1968, where, you know, I remember the election of 68 really well, and there were a lot of people who, you know, originally were gung-ho with Bobby Kennedy. Here was a wonderful new guy who was anti-war and was just, you know, the man, and then he was assassinated, and then there was Gene McCarthy and people, you know, get clean for Gene, and then George McGovern, and then Hubert Humphrey, you know, using basically kind of the power of the party, the smoke-filled rooms back in that day, pulled the thing out, and a lot of people, a lot of young people who had gotten very involved, particularly with Bobby's candidacy early in the primaries, just walked away. And you ended up with Nixon, you know, winning the election. Now, admittedly by a squeaker, but I don't want to see that scenario played out.
We can't have that happen. And one of the good news that came out of last night for Democrats is that we had record numbers. In Ohio, for example, three times as many young Democrats voted than Republicans. And the notion of having new people coming into the process. In Maryland, I saw a state senator the other day who told me that the number was that you have 17-year-olds who are eligible to vote if their birthday is before Election Day 2008. And 50% of the eligible 17-year-olds voted. That is fantastic. We want people to be part of this. We want people to turn this country around and get us back on track. And we want to make sure that we are a unified party that's recognizing that and a unified nation that we can't afford a prescription for four more years.
Susie, I was on Fox News this morning, and the topic just before I came on was how many of you Republicans out in Texas voted for Hillary Clinton last night? And in the 15 minutes or 14 minutes before I went on the air, they'd gotten over 1,200 affirmative emails. And they were talking about, they were almost giddy about how often this was happening. I'm seeing blogs that suggest that conservative talk show hosts across Texas are getting angry calls from Republicans who went and voted for Hillary Clinton like Rush told them to, and then discovered that they couldn't vote for down-ticket Republicans. They only had a Democratic ballot. If Michigan and Florida decide to do caucuses, can we make sure that they're closed so this kind of thing can't happen?
I'm sure that they would be. Yeah. And I think that makes total sense. That's the whole caucus process allows us to do that.
Yeah.
Tom, one of the big thing, though, is what we really need to understand is that this is really important. This election is so critical. We don't want to extend the Bush tax credits, the tax breaks.
And the Supreme Court is at stake here. I mean, there's so much at stake. Susie, we've got to go, but thanks so much for coming on the program.
It was great to be with you, Tom.
Susan,
and I hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you. Susan Turnbull, the Democratic National Committee. Democrats.org.
The Tom Hartman Program. The True People's Radio.
Tom Hartman.
Now, I might be old-fashioned, but I believe it's true that folks around the world are pretty much like me and you. I have a silly notion if we want them to be friends, they prefer that we don't torture them. But I'm a liberal.
He's a liberal.
I'm a liberal.
Unforgivable.
Terrible.
I'm a liberal.
He's
absolutely
liberal.
Terrible.
I'm a liberal.
He's your typical liberal.
Liberal, 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 liberal.
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here. The Tom Hartman Program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans, because keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. Does the press treat one of the presidential candidates with kid gloves? Yes! Who is that candidate? John McCain. John McCain. Devil's Tower blogging over at Daily Kos today. Spot on. Barb and MD already covered McCain's as a shindig for his press buddies, and then Jeff Mason at Reuters writing hard-hitting investigative reporting about John McCain. This is Jeff Mason from Reuters. The Arizona senator took some time off from the campaign trail over the weekend to relax at his cabin in the northern part of the state, and he invited the traveling press corps over for a couple hours to evaluate his cooking skills. So how do they taste? Objectivity prohibits a good reporter from passing judgment, but let's put it this way. Everyone wants to come back. Oh, isn't that sweet? Isn't that just darling? Yeah, well, what did CBS think? John McCain has been campaigning hard for months. His traveling press corps has been working just as hard in covering him. So this weekend, McCain played host to a handful of senators and governors at his Arizona vacation home. And today, the press joined the party. We munched on brownies, cookies, and cake for dessert. For McCain, the icing on the cake will be clinching the GOP nomination this week. If that happens, McCain and his press corps can expect a change. Increased security would limit their unfettered access to intimate gatherings, and McCain's barbecue ribs could be off the menu. Ah, tough work. Hard work, brutal stuff, as Devil's Tower is blogging over at Daily Kos. The press is never mentioning Charlie Black, of all people, working for John McCain. He's a lobbyist. He's got a lobbying firm. He made a couple million bucks this year as a lobbyist. And he's the guy that goes on Tim Russert's show to tell America how John McCain's not in the pocket of lobbyists, and nobody even bothers to say, Charlie, aren't you a lobbyist? Isn't John McCain surrounded by lobbyists? This is the kind of stuff that I want to hear from the Clinton campaign and from the Obama campaign. Let's talk about what's going on with John McCain. Bernadette in Los Angeles. Hey, Bernadette. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I have three comments to make. Number one, when Bush was talking about when he said he didn't know that gas was going to go to $4 a gallon,
mm-hmm.
and everybody jumped on that, I think he's not stupid. I think he knows that people think he's dumb. So he says that. So what does everybody do? Instead of focusing on the $4 a gallon, they talk about how dumb he is. So
that's
a good diversion tactic, I think.
Yeah.
Number two, I think that people have to understand that Chicago politics, and I go back to the Daily days,
mm-hmm.
that Chicago politics is not genteel. It's rough and tumble. And Obama's talking about the politics of hope and all that. That's fine. But everybody has to understand he can get down there and he can fight with the big boys. You don't get to Chicago politics in the
He had to do that in order to become a state senator from
Absolutely.
Illinois.
Yeah. And the other thing is that I totally agree with you that when I was last night watching the returns and when Hillary won the three of the four primaries, my first thought was now both Democratic candidates must focus on John McCain.
Yeah.
They have to peel away the independents. They have to peel away the liberal Republicans. They have to expose him.
Yeah, and Chris Matthews was there with Ed Rendell, the governor of Pennsylvania, who you know is a Hillary Clinton supporter. I guess that doesn't matter, frankly, in this context. And was almost giddy and gleeful about how much money and how much time these two campaigns are now going to spend in the state of Pennsylvania. I mean, it's going to be an economic boon to Pennsylvania. All the radio and TV stations there are going to bring in millions of bucks, and all the hotels are going to be sold out, and all the venues and everything. But is it going to be the best thing for the Democratic Party? Is it going to be the best thing for democracy in America? Is it going to be the best thing for the future of this nation? I doubt it. If it's played out the way that Chris Matthews and Ed Rendell were talking about last night about, oh, yeah, let's watch these two candidates beat each other up.
No, I agree with you, and I think that the Democrats have to focus now on who the real opposition is. And it's not Hillary and it's not Obama. It's McCain. It's always been McCain. It's been the Republican ideology, the Republican philosophy, which has been an unmitigated disaster and will continue to be a disaster. And if this time the Democrats, and I'm mindful that I believe the last two Democratic presidential elections were in fact stolen, but I believe this time if the Democrats cannot snatch victory from the jaws of defeat this time.
Mm.
I swear I might become an independent. It will be, you know, so frustrating. But
or become a Canadian, you know. It's there's got to be a certain threshold. But you know, we have to be prepared for that. I mean, we were all convinced. I was on the air doing this show in 2004, and we were all fully expecting that John Kerry was going to walk away with it. And then when he said he wasn't even going to contest Ohio, I mean, it was like for the next week I was doing grief counseling on the air. Bernadette, thank you for the call. I mean, we have to be prepared for anything and keep on fighting. You know, none of these battles, none of the extraordinary things that America represents were achieved overnight. But still, let's do it. Let's do it now. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Tom. When I was younger, said, boy, you're going to be
Keep it that way. Let's improve it. Let's reclaim American values. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Speaking of Charlie Black, by the way, the John McCain guy, frontman, campaign strategist, campaign advisor, chief campaign advisor, I guess is his title, the McCain campaign, Charles Black Jr. He's a lobbyist for a company called United Technologies. And a tip of the hat to Stuart in Seattle, who sent me a note pointing this out. So Sean Taylor, our enthusiastic and competent and brilliant producer, goes over to United Technologies' website, utc.com, and looks at their recent press releases to see what they're up to. And this is dated day before yesterday. Or would this be 3 days ago? March 2nd. What is today? The 5th, I think? Yeah. So this is, yeah, it's the 5th today. So it's 3 days ago. United Technologies Corp. I'm reading right from their press release, right off United Technologies' website. And keep in mind, the chief strategist for the McCain campaign, Charlie Black, is the lobbyist for this company. United Technologies Corporation today announced that it has made a proposal to the board of directors of Diebold, Incorporated, NYSE DBD, to acquire all of the outstanding shares of Diebold for $40 per share in cash, representing a total enterprise value of approximately $3 billion. UTC's proposal represents a premium of approximately 66% to Diebold's closing stock price of February 29, 2008. The proposal is not subject to any financing contingency. So they're going to pay 66% more than the stock is worth to instantly acquire the company. And there's a letter then, there's a series of correspondence between the head of United Technologies and the head of Diebold to Mr. Lauer, chairman of the board of Diebold. United Technologies offers to acquire 66% premium, 45% premium to the three-month trailing average, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you get a response back from Mr. George David, chairman and chief executive officer of United Technologies. And then there's a letter back, and the final letter back from United, the final letter back from Diebold. We ask for a response from United Technologies. We ask for a response by next Tuesday, February 26th. And then in the reply, UTT's proposal is subject to satisfactory completion of due diligence and customary regulatory approvals. UTC expects that once it reaches a timely agreement with Diebold's board of directors, the proposed transaction would be completed within 90 days. So let's see, 90 days. That means that before the election, the defense contractor, whose lobbyist is the head of the is one of the heads of the McCain campaign, is going to acquire America's second largest voting machine company. Assuming that all the facts that I just shared with you are accurate. And we have to double check that Charlie Black actually is currently a lobbyist for United Technologies. We're still trying to track that down. But it looks like that's the case. I'm not suggesting there's a conspiracy here. I'm just curious. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Stuart in West Seattle, Washington. Hey, Stuart.
Yes, a bunch of things have come up while I was waiting, but the main thing I want to talk about is we've got several problems here, all with one excellent solution. One problem is that your vote doesn't count. I know Susie Turnbull from the Democratic National Committee wants you to feel your votes count, but as far as I can tell, the party insiders don't really want your vote to count.
Actually, they do. First of all, the superdelegates are only about 20% of the total delegates, and secondly, the party would not last. I mean, the party would not exist if there was a perception that your vote didn't count or a reality that your vote didn't count. People are not that stupid.
Well, I don't believe our vote usually counts most of the time because we're in districts where if you're in a Democratic district, you can vote Democratic till the cows come home. And it doesn't mean that one more Democrat's going to get elected. It means the same.
Are you talking about gerrymandering?
Be elected.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. There are a lot of ways. But the other, these private clubs, right now we have two private clubs that effectively have a duopoly over our presidency, and they're not run by the average person. They're run by the private club.
Stuart, if that's the case, it's because you haven't showed up.
I show up every time. I'm out there campaigning for my lesser of two evils, waving the sign.
But my point is, you're calling the Democratic Party, and I referred to the Democratic Party as a club, and because I think it's a good metaphor. But the reality is that if you or I wanted to take over General Electric because they own NBC and MSNBC, and we'd like to have a say in their programming or something like that, we would have. Or if we wanted to take over Diebold, for example, like United Technologies is doing, we'd have to have billions of dollars. I mean, United Technology is offering $3 billion for Diebold. If we wanted to take over the Democratic Party, all we have to do is show up at the monthly meetings.
We could if we organized enough people to show up to all these little meetings, we could take it over. I agree, and I've been thinking about doing
that's what
exactly
we need to
that.
Do. That's what we need to do.
That's why I joined the local Democratic Party, even though I'm disgusted with so many of the things they've done and not done for years. The other problem is negative campaigning. Oh, and negative campaigning and strategic voting. So many people now are voting for someone. These Republicans who are voting for Hillary are voting, I hesitate to call them Republicans, they're people who generally vote Republican, are strategically voting for Hillary because they think she's the weaker candidate. They're not voting for her because they're the one they prefer as their top choice. And the other problem is the negative campaigning. When you do negative campaigning, you both dirty the person you're campaigning against, and you make yourself look pretty bad. If we had instant runoff voting, people where we rank your choice, first choice, Hillary or Obama or whoever, Kucinich, second choice, Edwards, third choice, Obama, fourth choice, Hillary, use the instant
absolutely
runoff
agree,
method.
Stuart. Absolutely agree. And you know who is the biggest proponent of instant runoff voting is the Green Party, which is why I think it's useful and important, frankly, for people at the local level to be supportive of their local Green Party. And you can't register as both a Green and a Democrat at the same time, but you can certainly join and participate with both parties.
I've been a member of the Green Party before, and for me, in this level here, it was more effective to be trying to work from within the Democratic Party to change it.
Right. But the Green Party has now caused more than 300 communities around the United States to have instant runoff voting, the largest being San Francisco. That is a wonderful and extraordinary thing, and I absolutely agree with your point about instant runoff voting. The Democratic Party needs to adopt it, and frankly, we need the Green Party pushing them to do those kind of things. Stuart, thank you very much. Brilliant point, and do appreciate the call. Dwayne in Sonoma County, California. Hey, Dwayne.
Well, yes, that's a good guess, and instant runoff, the Democrats should adopt it internally, but
yeah.
I called to criticize you.
Okay.
And it's for not being aggressive enough in your rejection of NAFTA. Repudiate it.
That's what I've been saying all along, is walk away from it. I don't think it needs to be renegotiated.
It never passed. It didn't get the two-thirds vote in the Senate needed to pass a treaty. It never got the 67 votes.
Because they didn't call it a treaty. They called it a trade agreement.
But that'd be a good question for Obama. Where in the Constitution does it say you can pass agreements?
Well,
it's an equal.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because under NAFTA, we have surrendered some of our sovereignty. I mean, it was under NAFTA that the dolphin-safe tuna stuff went away because the Mexican government sued us, I think it was a company in Mexico sued us with the support, oddly enough, of the Clinton administration, saying that this was an illegal restraint of trade to say that you had to use fishing techniques that were more expensive to catch tuna that didn't also kill dolphins. And so now, dolphin safe is like a slogan. It's not a reality. And this was something that the National Humane Society worked on for over 25 years to get passed.
Yep.
And NAFTA undid. So you're absolutely right. It is a surrender of sovereignty. It is a treaty. And yeah, let's revisit it, and that's a great way to go about it. That's a great way to go about it. Christopher in Carson City, Nevada. Hey, Christopher.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to point out that,
there's a big stink going on about Obama having more delegates than Clinton and representing more people because of having more delegates. But the reality is that there are, and I don't know if this is true throughout the country, but I know in Nevada here, there were precincts that had 10, 11 delegates that the Obama people focused on getting that had very few voters.
Yeah. They were quite strategic about it. In fact, I got an email this morning from the Clinton campaign. This is from Harold Ickes and Mark Penn. And oddly, the Obama campaign has been, in my opinion, doing a very poor job of this kind of thing, of communicating with the media, of, you know, showing up, being there, being available. They're doing a great job on the ground, but a lousy job with the media. And in this email from Harold Ickes, and I'm assuming these numbers are accurate, or he wouldn't be putting them out, he says, in the popular vote, now he's including Michigan and Florida in these, so I think that, you know, you take it with a grain of salt, that Hillary Clinton has gotten 13,442,321 votes, and Barack Obama has gotten 13,445,140 votes. Now, there's a 32,000 vote difference. But again, the caveat is, you know, Michigan and Ohio. But, yeah, good point, Christopher. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. The reality is that there's just a whisker between the two right now. And the Democratic Party, in my opinion, has to figure out what they're going to do about this. 45 minutes, not to mention the voters. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news.
Just a mile up the road. Take it in, take it with you when you go.
Who says you can't go home? Who says you can't go?
9:30 before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you live from New York to San Francisco, Los Angeles to Pittsburgh. And Mia Farrow, award-winning actress, humanitarian, and author, is on the line with us. Mia Farrow, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Your website, miafarrow.org, your humanitarian website, has the photos link right up at the very top, is absolutely shocking and stunning. You have recently been to southern Sudan, the Darfur region, and to Kenya, which is where I'm going next week.
Yeah.
And I just wanted you to share your experiences with our listeners.
Since 2004, I've actually made 8 journeys into the region, also to Central African Republic, Eastern Chad, yes, Kenya, and South Sudan and Darfur itself. Oh, God. The level, I don't think people realize the scale of the anguish there, the palpable suffering of, we have in that entire region, more than 3 million people are displaced in urgent need of help. There are 2.5 million people, mostly women and children, in camps across Darfur and Eastern Chad. Terrible levels of poverty, of course, but it's hunger and disease and outright attacks that are killing people. In many of the camps, a UNICEF statistic says that 30% of the population is suffering from acute malnutrition. So, I mean, the needs are enormous. And what you can go to my website, which is miafarrow.org, and that's the most visited part of the website, is what we can do. And there are things we can all do. I mean, one is, of course, support the humanitarians who are there, just getting the food and keeping the water so that the wells keep going, or they call them bladders. They truck in the water sometimes, but mm-hmm. water and food are hugely insufficient. But above all, safety. No one is safe in that region. So when we talk about Darfur, Eastern Chad, and terrible poverty in South Sudan, and they are sliding really into a very unstable situation. But in Darfur and Eastern Chad, the amount of people that have been driven out of their villages, the villages set on fire, people butchered, and those that survive now really languish in camps. So we support the humanitarian effort, and then we're looking for the political push to stop the violence, to stop the aerial bombardments of civilians, to stop the ground attacks upon civilians and even upon the camps. And here, there is a giant that is protecting this regime in Khartoum that is the cause of so much suffering in Darfur, Eastern Chad, yes, and that is China. Through Chinese oil revenues, which now top $2 billion a year, the government in Khartoum is able to carry out its genocidal campaign against its own people, the non-Arab population of Darfur and now Eastern Chad, too. Not only that, but they have, with their close business alliance, the best protector on the Security Council, which has really stopped the peacekeepers from coming into the region in any capacity that would really provide protection.
Now, Steven Spielberg just recently pulled out of participation in the Olympics in protest of China's role in the disaster, this humanitarian disaster in Darfur and their support of the Sudanese government. What can people do to lobby, as it were? I don't think you can directly lobby a communist dictatorship.
Well, you know, we can in an indirect way. Mr. Spielberg did pull out, he said it was a matter of conscience, and it cannot be business as usual. Well, some people are conducting business as usual, and it's this that we must examine now. Looking at the Olympic Games coming up in Beijing, the Olympic Games have been called, China's coming out party. It's post-Tiananmen Square moment. Well, the sponsors of the Games have not pulled out. And they're household words, McDonald's, Microsoft, Visa, Johnson & Johnson, I have them all on my website. We would wish that they would use their leverage because they are the ears, they have the close ear to Beijing right now in the lead up toward the Olympics to persuade China to use its influence with Khartoum to cease the bombardments and attacks of civilians and admit the peacekeepers.
Because the reality is that one phone call from one of the senior officials of China to Khartoum would probably put an end to it all.
It could. It absolutely has the potential to do that. And what the late Senator Paul Simon said of the Rwandan massacre, if just 100 people had called, then the United States would have intervened.
You mean had called his Senate office?
Yes.
To lobby him?
Yes.
So people can, we have a website, callcongress.org, which just has toll-free numbers for Congress. People can call their members of the House of Representatives, their member of the House of Representatives,
their
two senators.
Yeah, there's an 800 genocide number, which is run by Genocide Intervention Network, and they would put you in touch, if you just dial 1-800-GENOCIDE, they'd put you in touch with your legislators appropriate to your region.
Great. We just have a minute left. We're talking with Mia Farrow, actress, humanitarian, longtime participant with UNICEF. What is the most important thing that people... Oh, and by the way, let me once again encourage people to check out your website, miafarrow.org, and in particular, look at the photos in the upper right-hand corner of that link, and then everything else starts to make sense.
Yeah.
What's the most important thing people can be doing right now?
Well, I think it's the two things. What I'm asking people to do is call those sponsors in this window of opportunity. Above all, China wants to hold their Olympic Games and not have them blemished. Steven Spielberg's pulling out did blemish the Games. And I think the sponsors, if they were to pull out or use their point of leverage, they can do that. And then let us not forget our humanitarians who are sustaining more than 4 million of the most fragile lives imaginable. And there on my website are the photographs that I took over my 8 trips into the region. And I'll eventually post more so that the people are welcome to take them. Just take them.
It's an absolutely extraordinary website, miafarrow.org. Mia Farrow, thank you so much for the extraordinary work you're doing and for coming on our program.
Thank you, and safe travels to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. 57 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman program. We'll continue with our conversations about the elections, about politics, about strange things in the news, and Larry Scott will be with us in the next hour. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program, the No Boring Zone. Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Where smart people get their news.
Well, they've done it. Somebody has, well, not somebody, a specific somebody, the Campaign to Defend America. Don't you love it when progressive groups get these, like, testosterone-sounding names? It's a Campaign to Defend America. We got our
We got our guns here, and we got our ideas, and we got...
Anyway, whatever. It's a campaign to defend America, a new 501c4. This is a progressive group, and this is the ad that they're going to be running in Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Where does John McCain stand on the issues? $1 trillion in Iraq over the next 10 years. McSame as Bush. A millionaire who's for tax cuts for millionaires. McSame as Bush. Oil companies. They get tax breaks while we pay at the pump. McSame as Bush. Absolutely no plan for universal health care. McSame as Bush. And we need a new direction, not the McSame old thing. Campaign to Defend America is responsible for the content of this advertising.
McSame as Bush. You know, instead of calling him, you know, Grandpa or whatever, it's just, yeah, McSame. Instead of McCain, McSame. I like that. It's got a nice ring to it. McSame. See, this is the campaign that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton need to compete with to get my vote. I want to hear which one of them is going to do a better job of beating up John McCain, essentially. I mean, here we have the Republicans gleeful, giddy, that there's going to be another 6-7 weeks of the Democratic primary. And if those 6 or 7 weeks of the Democratic primary, and maybe even longer than that, in fact, it probably will be longer than that, if that period of time is spent with Hillary Clinton saying nasty things about Barack Obama and Barack Obama saying nasty things about Hillary Clinton, then I think a lot of Democrats are going to check out. A lot of independents are going to walk away. The Democratic Party is going to lose in November. And nobody is served by that. Instead, if the competition is between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama for who can do the best job of convincing me that not only should I not vote for John McCain, but instead vote for whichever one of them is doing the convincing, but that I should get my butt out there and walk a precinct and knock on doors and hand out flyers and send them $50 and everything else. Whoever does the best job of convincing me and every other voter out there, then this primary will serve a great purpose, because as long as the primary is going on, there's a lot of media attention. As long as the primary is going on, there's, you know, this ad versus that ad and these competing ads. And yeah, I know that what the media really likes is the bloody stuff, the red meat stuff. But if you don't give it to them, they'll take whatever they can get. So let's give them this.
Where does John McCain stand on the issues? $1 trillion in Iraq over the next 10 years. McSame as Bush.
McSame as Bush. Let's give them that. Let's have a competition over which one of these two Democratic candidates is going to do a better job of defeating the Republicans in this election in November. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone. Oh, by the way, it's something I meant to mention to you, and somehow it just slipped on by. Yesterday's election in Vermont had one very notable little event that probably most people don't know about, because I didn't see it covered in any of the national mainstream media. And that was that two towns in Vermont, Bennington and, as I recall, looking for the story here, I can't find it. In any case, two towns in Vermont voted to arrest George W. Bush and Dick Cheney if either one of them should show up in town. Now, that's pretty cool. Excuse me, it's Brattleboro and Marlboro are the two towns. They voted to... Now, the fact of the matter is that Vermont is the only state, probably because Bernie Sanders used to be their only congressman and is now their senator, one of their senators, is the only state in the union that Bush has never visited, never campaigned in, never been there, never ever. But these two towns, God bless them, Marlboro and Brattleboro, and we're on the air in Brattleboro, tip of the hat to our listeners there. These two towns have voted to indict President Bush and Vice President Cheney for violating the Constitution. And if they show up in town, they get arrested. and then extradited for appropriate prosecution if they're not impeached first. That's what this is what the resolution said that the good citizens of Brattleboro and Marlboro, Vermont voted yes on last night. Now, the question in my mind is, why did not the national media pick that up? I mean, they're so, you know, gee, cat stuck in a tree. The sexopus. Did you hear about this? This is a six-legged octopus rather than an eight-legged octopus. That was a big story. I would think that two towns voting to arrest the president of the United States would be a pretty big story. I mean, it's kind of a sexy story. You could create graphics to go with it. You could act it out. There's a lot that you could do with that. I predict Keith Olbermann will cover it tonight on Countdown. God bless him. And everywhere else, it's going to be completely and resoundingly ignored. So, c'est la vie. 866-303-2270. And Alina in San Francisco. Hey, Alina, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. On my mind, I was hoping maybe that you could have asked Susan, but it's way past her time. I'm someone who left the Democratic Party for the liberal side because of them not going with the more liberal people. And look what they did to Dennis Kucinich. He had to drop out of the presidential running because they had three or four people up for his seat. Now, his seat is a pretty secure congressional seat. Why would they waste resources running three or four people?
Well, because it's not a they. If you live in San Francisco.
Right.
If you decided that you didn't like the way that Nancy Pelosi was representing you, because she's your member of Congress.
Right.
You can go down to the Democratic National or down to the local Democratic Party and register if there's certain thresholds. If you can get a certain number of signatures on a petition or something like that. I don't know what it is for, you know, San Francisco, California. But you can go down and register to run against her in a primary. Anybody can. And in fact, Cindy Sheehan already has.
Yes, and somebody else has, too. There's a woman named Shirley that's out there every Thursday at noon demanding impeachment.
There you go. So there were a few Democrats in Dennis Kucinich's district who, for whatever reason, I know at least one of them felt that Dennis was spending too much time running for president and not enough time representing, you know, his hometown. But there were a couple of Democrats who decided that they were going to run against him, and he easily beat all of them. And I'm assuming that he was able to use the millions of dollars that he raised in his national presidential campaign to do so, and will do that to hold on and you know, roll that money over to hold on to his seat. So, you know, he's doing pretty well, and the Democratic Party hasn't hurt him at all, and this wasn't any kind of giant conspiracy by the party. The party, you know, obviously has always supported Dennis Kucinich and continues to.
Okay, well, thank you for that answer, Tom.
Okay, thanks a lot, Elena. Thanks for the call. Dennis is a big boy. I mean, now that sounds patronizing. I didn't mean it that way, but Dennis, or it could be taken that way, I suppose. Dennis is a good guy and can stand up for himself, and in fact, last night did. He won the primary. He will win the general election, too. He is much beloved in his neighborhood. David in Pittsburgh. Hey, Dave, we've got about a minute here before this break.
Okay, and thank you very much. I've listened to you almost every day for the last 4 years. Let me at least take this minute. I'd like to know, you were talking to, I think her name is Susan from the DNC.
Yeah, Susan Turnbull. She's
okay.
The vice chair.
You had asked her this question, would there be closed caucuses?
Yes.
And I'd like to know what you meant by that. Does that mean secret ballot?
No, what I meant by that is, will they do it in a way that you have to be registered as a Democrat to vote so that Republicans can't come in and vote in the Democratic caucus? That's what's called a closed caucus or a closed primary.
Right.
Whereas in Texas last night and in Ohio, they had open primaries. The caucus was closed, but the primaries were open. And so any Republican could walk in and vote for anybody they wanted.
Okay, let me throw this out at you. I can't seem to get in touch with anybody that can get in touch with Barack Obama, and I think I've figured out how to get him to win the Hispanic vote in November, and that is to propose that that he make Mexico the next state.
Ain't gonna happen, David. But hey, if you go over to BarackObama.com, I think, or .org, he probably owns both of them. You can find how to contact his campaign staff. 16 minutes past the hour. Good one.
Hartman. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Save us from hypocrisy. Save us from the lies. Save our homes from foreclosing. Stop treating us as spies. Save our jobs from leaving. Bring back made in USA.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans, because keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. Larry Scott, the chief cook and bottle washer founder over at VAWatchdog.org, America's number one independent veterans website, on the line with us. Hey, Larry.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you again.
Great to have you with us, as always. Right up at the top of VAWatchdog.org today, you've got a link to a page or a part of your site, VA, Vote VA, or Vote Vets, I guess it is.
Yeah, Vote Smart, Vote Vet. And what this basically is what we've done is we've taken a lot of information that you're going to find on VoteSmart.org. Okay, Vote Smart is without a doubt the best information site. And
right. Absolutely unbiased, totally nonpartisan.
And right, and what it does is it relies heavily on the statements of the candidates and on the records of the candidates. And what we've done here is we've mapped out all of the presidential candidates. Of course, they keep thinning out here. And viewers at VAWatchdog.org, readers can come. They can click on the links, and they can go find the voting records of McCain, Obama, and Clinton on veterans issues,
right,
and how they're rated by various veterans organizations.
So let's compare some of those, because you would think, you know, off the top of your head, that John McCain, being the guy who kind of runs on the fact that he was a prisoner of war and he fought in the Vietnam War and all that sort of thing, or he, I guess he didn't, well, flying a plane, I guess, qualifies as fighting a war, that, and certainly being a prisoner of war does, that he would be voting 80-90% of the time in ways that would be in the interests of veterans. Certainly, from what I'm seeing on this website, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are way up there in those kinds of percentages on virtually every area with regard to the interests of vets.
Yes.
How's Mr. McCain doing?
How do we put this politely? Not so well.
Yeah.
I think that really is the best way to do it. Senator McCain has, over the years, voted pretty much along party lines when it comes to veterans issues. If you take the agenda of the Disabled American Veterans, the DAV, for 2006...
Which my grandfather was a member of.
Well, I'm a member, too. He voted 20%. They rated him a 20.
Wow.
In 2006 for his vote on veterans issues. The Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, Paul Rykoff's group, gave McCain grade of D, as in D, A, B, C, D, in 2006 because of the way he voted. The Retired Enlisted Association, a very, very powerful veterans organization, in 2006 gave McCain an 18%. And what that means is, of all the issues that they felt were important to veterans, he voted yes 18% of the time. And we can go back over the years, too. In 2005, DAV gave McCain a 25%. In 2004, Retired Enlistment gave him a 0. But those are all listed there for people to see. McCain does not have a very good voting record when it comes to veterans issues.
That's amazing. And I am hopeful that the Obama and Clinton campaigns will now begin the process of educating people about things like this. So, but that's my partisan shtick.
Well, no, that's fine, and I think they should. I think the problem right now, and we should really talk about this, is Clinton and Obama have been very, very generic when it has come to veterans issues. They at one time are reaching out to veterans. They're visiting with the veterans groups, and they're going around to the VFW, the American Legion, Vietnam Veterans of America, and so forth. But they're being very, very generic in what they want to do as far as military health care and veterans health care. We get things like, we will take care of our veterans, but they haven't really come to specifics. How is that going to be funded? What type of health care, for how long, and things of that nature. And I think what these candidates have to do is they have to step out put something in print and say, here is what we offer the veterans of America, and here's why we want your vote. And I really feel they're going to have to do that to get. Now, John McCain has done that, interestingly enough, although I believe he's going in the wrong direction. John McCain says, I'm going to give every veteran a plastic card. He can take it any place and get the health care he wants. That's a very dangerous move, though, because we saw what happened over the years as our military retirees, as they closed down the Army hospitals and the Navy hospitals around the country,
right.
And the government gave them a plastic card, and now they're finding out that that plastic card stuck them in an HMO called TRICARE that is managed and operated by private health care operators, and many of them are paying very large deductibles and copays and other fees for the health care that they were promised for free for staying in the military more than 20 years. So although McCain has made a promise, I'm going to give you a plastic card, what the plastic card would do would put veterans in an HMO for which they would pay, and it would mean the end of the VA. So what I think Obama and Clinton have to come back and do is say something positive. They have to react to this McCain statement, and they have to give veterans something they can really bite into if they want to get the veteran vote.
Right. It's once again the Republicans viewing things like the VA as socialism and the Democrats saying...
And trying to privatize it.
Right, and trying to privatize it and making sure that their buddies and campaign contributors get all the contracts.
There you go.
Larry Scott, VAWatchdog.org is the website. Check it out. Larry, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at
4 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our phone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. And let's see here, Mar in Los Angeles. Hey, Mar, how you doing today?
Hey, Tom. I adore your America and your program most of all. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank
on
you.
My birthday, good to talk to you.
Well, happy birthday. Tomorrow is Louise's birthday, my wife's.
That's oh, it so, is. So another Pisces. Happy birthday,
Patico,
Louise.
Yeah. And Sean's birthday is right around now, too. Oh, no, wait a minute. Sean is a Taurus. Never mind. Anyhow, as you were saying, you wanted to call about Dennis Kucinich. I know you're very active. You were very active with his campaign.
Yes, and I still am. I have supervised a bunch of volunteers to make calls this past weekend to his district. And he actually had quite a fight because a lot of corporate entities were backing Simperman, who took 35% of the vote.
Yeah, Joe Simperman, who was the city councilman, who said that Dennis was a showman, not a legislator. But, you know, Dennis got 50% of the vote, and Simperman only got 35%. And I
see that as close. 15% is still not a landslide, like he normally has in the general.
Yeah, well, he's going to win the general with a landslide.
This was quite a fight. I mean, he had to stop the presidential rates and go back there, and Simperman was outspending him 5-1 and doing sleazy ads, really horrible ads, and, you know, they were all over YouTube. They were disgusting ads.
But the reality is that he had four primary challengers. Simperman was the only one who was well-funded. He'd raised about $700,000. And spent it. But Dennis had, what, $3 million or so that went, you know, left over from his presidential campaign?
No, that was all gone. That was the other thing, that he didn't have that to roll over. No, he raised about $800,000 in the congressional race.
Mm-hmm.
That came up quickly, and that saved his butt. But Simperman absolutely was still outspending him TV ad-wise. 5-1.
Okay. So, well, Mara, thank you for getting it on the record and keeping it straight.
Thank God he's in there. We desperately need his voice.
There you go. Yeah, he's a great member of Congress and a good voice for all of us. James, thank you, Mara. James in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, James.
Hey, Tom. Being on hold, I really believe that thing, having both candidates go after McCain is a great strategy. I hope they take it on. What I wanted to talk about was the tone of the whole campaign in the Democratic race. Early on, you remember Barack Obama spoke about the Reagan Revolution, and immediately Hillary's campaign, she came out in a speech and said, he thinks their ideas are better than ours. Now, right there, that seems to set the whole tone for this, and I think it's dirty campaigning.
Well, on the other hand, I mean, let's just acknowledge this. Barack Obama has said that he has the judgment to be president because he opposed the war from the get-go, which implies that Hillary Clinton doesn't have the judgment to be president. I mean, it's not like either of these candidates are pristine. I would broadly agree that Barack Obama has run largely a more above-the-fray campaign than Hillary Clinton has, at least recently. But neither, you know, both of them have, you know, at times when they've been hit, they've both hit back. And what I'm concerned about and what I'd love to see is both of them, if they're going to compete for our votes, if they're going to compete for our attention, if they're going to compete for our affections, as it were, let them do it by demonstrating which one of them will take on John McCain today.
I agree
more aggressively.
Wholeheartedly. I agree. I think that's great. I'm going to pass it along to anyone I meet. I'm just, you know, if they're going to fight for us as president, I don't want any dirty fighting. I don't want any lies. I don't want any mischaracterizations of other nations. That's what I'm concerned with because of this Hillary campaign thing that came out. They knew exactly what Obama said, yet they just put it out that he thinks Republican ideas are better than Democrats.
Yeah, well, that's wrong. Yeah, that's Mark Penn campaigning, and I'm not a big fan of it. And you're right, James, and broadly. And as I said, both sides have engaged in attacks on the other, and it's time to start attacking the common enemy, which is John McCain. I mean, you know, attacking politically, of course. Stuart in Wayne, New Jersey. Hey, Stuart.
Hey, Tom. It's so wonderful to hear your voice.
Thank you.
I just wanted at the top to tell you the thanks of the nation for callcongress.org. It's a wonderful thing you're doing, providing those toll-free numbers so people can get in touch with their representatives in Washington.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we just compile it and threw it on our website. If anybody has new numbers that we missed or anything like that, just, you know, let us know, send me an email. Or if any of them go, sometimes the numbers die out, you know, they stop working, let us know about that.
I have some numbers, and I would like to convey those to your people. The reason I'm calling is I was in Concord, New Hampshire, February 19th, and testified before the legislature there on Betty Hall's Resolution 24 to commence impeachment proceedings against President Bush and Vice President Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
It was extraordinary, Tom. I wish you'd been there. There were just an amazing assemblage of experts who testified. We had, in addition to Betty Hall, we had Paul Leto, who's one of the best constitutional lawyers in the country.
I know Paul.
Right up there with Mike Ratner at the Center for Constitutional Law. And we had Herb Hoffman, who's running for Senate in Maine. We had John Nirenberg, the great patriot who walked 485 miles from Boston to D.C.
Now, Stuart, was this for the state of New Hampshire resolution, or was this a national?
Yes, it is a state of New Hampshire,
resolution.
But here's the great news, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming up for a vote. There was a report that was authored by committee member Representative Eleanor Kelman, mm-hmm. of the State Federal Relations and Veteran Affairs Committee in the New Hampshire legislature. And here's what she said. This is short. She said, impeachment is a tool of accountability, part of the checks and balances process of our democracy, which is available to the citizens in our democracy. The people have a right to petition their representatives, and we legislators have a duty to respond and act, regardless of the timing, convenience, political expediency, or other concerns which are secondary to the preservation of the democratic process. We believe the process of impeachment should be exercised to maintain accountability in the office of the presidency. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It absolutely is wonderful. Stuart, I've got a terrible echo coming back.
Yes, I know. Tom, just let me say real quick that, you know, I would like to arrange for Betty to be on your air if I could get to your producer. And the second thing is that if everybody listening, there is a dedicated email address for people. We want tens of thousands of people all across the country to send a simple email simply saying, I support impeachment, to Betty Hall. Go to our website, impeachthem.com. That's impeachthem.com. And you can get the email address and learn the whole story, see the full text of the resolution. We're going to make this happen, Tom. It's going to happen. The vote will be about March 12th to 15th. And we're already in contact with Dennis Kucinich and Robert Wexler, the other great congressman.
Yeah, and both have been on this show talking about this issue. Stuart, drop an email. If you go to tomhartmann.com, you will find on our website the contact information for Sean Taylor, my producer, and you can just send her an email. Her email information is right there on the website, and with the new phone numbers for Congress that you have and the information that you have, so go for it. Thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. I'm sorry the phone line is just terrible, but the point that I wanted to make, when Stuart was reading from that resolution, it reminded me of another resolution that says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. When long trains of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Thomas Jefferson, 1776. Ann in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Ann.
Hi. I think in trying to understand the Texas primary versus caucus results, it's important to not so much consider the Republicans who may have been excluded from the caucuses, but the Democrats who were excluded because of children on a school night, because of homes and elderly parents to care for, two or three jobs to work, versus the young, relatively unencumbered people who dominate the caucus system. And in Washington State, 20 times as many, which also had a primary and a caucus, although no delegates were assigned from the primary, 20 times as many people voted in the primary, and Obama won that by 5%. 5% as many people voted in the caucus, which Obama won by 37%. Which gave him significantly more delegates than he would have had.
I understand, Ann, and you're right. And this is why I'm suggesting that what is going to have to be called a caucus in Michigan and Ohio and Florida, if the Democratic Party can pull it together. And it's simply called that because a caucus is the process when it's run by the party, and a primary is the process when it's run by the state government. When it's done in Michigan and Florida, it should simply be straight voting.
Yeah,
show
absolutely.
Up, mark a ballot, vote, go home. It should be, and with provisions for absentee ballots for people who are elderly or can't make it or have to work or have kids, etc. Yeah, this is spot on. Thank you, Ann, very much for the call and for clarifying. 45 minutes past it.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartmann Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Imagine law enforcement.
There you go. Let the campaigns know. We want to hear them take on John McCain, not each other. Welcome back. 866-303-2270. By the way, just following up on our story about United Technologies trying to take over the giant defense contractor trying to take over Diebold, Bobby sends me an email saying that yesterday's New York Times reported via Reuters, quote, Diebold said Monday that its board had rejected an unsolicited $2.64 billion takeover bid from the United Technologies Corporation, a diversified manufacturer, end of quote. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. Is Charlie Black, one of John McCain's senior advisors and a major lobbyist, is he a lobbyist for United Technologies? And if so, was he involved in helping United Technologies try to take over Diebold? And if so, why? And if not, you know, we'll track it down and let you know. Lee in Milwaukee. Hey, Lee, what's on your mind today?
Well, you mentioned the Vermont impeachment resolution is not being reported on the national media. I did see it on two occasions.
Really?
The first was on CNN last night, and, of course, it was treated as a joke. Wolf Blitzer brought it up and said, oh, isn't that funny? And they went to their legal analyst, and he said, oh, it doesn't carry any weight of law.
Aren't they cute there in Vermont? Isn't that? Let's just pat them on the heads.
Yep, exactly. And then this morning, NPR, actually, they have sort of their funny of the day that they insert right before their newscast, and that was their funny of the day. Oh, isn't it funny what they're doing in Vermont? And so I kind of think it reflects the Beltway mentality, and that's probably why Congress isn't doing anything about this.
Yeah, well, it's dead serious stuff to those of us who respect the rule of law and think that these guys have committed crimes that are worthy of impeachment. Lee, thank you very much for the call and the heads up on that stuff. George in Los Angeles. Hey, George.
Yeah, I do. You know, I'm being a little facetious, but I really believe this. The old-fashioned way of picking candidates to run for the president was in Tammany Hall. They meet in the back room, play cards, smoke cigarettes, drink, and they decide who's the best candidate, who's qualified, and they back them. With all these primaries, you got 20 people running, and they all think they're the greatest, and they all think they're electable. And,
Well, beyond that, you're actually making a case that I made on this program, George, and I wrote an op-ed about it, and I don't think I ever finished it. I think I got halfway through the thing. I don't think I got it posted on Common Dreams. But it was called Bring Back the Smoke-Filled Rooms. And my point was that right now, without meaningful campaign finance reform and without public ownership of elections, the candidates with the most money, not necessarily the best candidates, not necessarily the candidates with the greatest integrity, not necessarily but the candidates with the most money and or the most name recognition or the greatest ability to manipulate the media, or those who aren't favored by the media, are the ones who get promoted through this primary process, because voters are basically making decisions based on campaign advertisements and what they're hearing in the mainstream media. And at a certain point, you have to say, you know, if there's people who've given their entire lives to being activists within the Democratic Party, and I aspire to be one of those people one day, and I hope everybody who's listening to this program does, if there are people like that, they may well know a whole lot better who's going to be a good candidate than you know, Joe Sixpack, or me for that matter, just paying attention to TV campaign commercials or just getting the news from CBS, NBC, ABC, MSNBC, and CNN.
Yeah, and look what happened to John Edwards. You know, they knocked him out of the box because they weren't covering him.
That's right. As the coverage of John Edwards started to decline in the media, following that by a few weeks, his poll numbers started to decline. You're absolutely right. So, maybe bringing back the smoke-filled rooms is a good idea, George. Maybe it is. Phil, thank you. Phil in Santa Fe, at the very least, that's why I don't oppose superdelegates. You know, give them 20%. The smoke-filled rooms, 20%. That's cool. Phil in Santa Fe. Hey, Phil.
Hi there, Tom. Calling to tell you that democracy is on the march here in Santa Fe. We're very proud. We had as part of our local election, municipal election, we had a charter amendment which approved ranked choice voting here in Santa Fe for municipal elections.
That's great. Ranked choice voting being a variation on instant runoff voting.
That is correct. And there are people,
in fact, it's the variation that's used in New Zealand, I believe.
We've been working on this here for years, and we're all really excited about it. And, of course, this just affects us for municipal elections, for example, mayor, city council, or such. But it sets a really good example for the state and for other states.
And it's contagious.
For example, the inter-candidate rancor, you know, inter-party rancor, I think could be greatly reduced with our CV because every candidate is going to be somebody else's second choice, and you just don't want to get too many people too mad.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, you're absolutely right. In with instant runoff voting or ranked choice voting, what you have is a system where everybody puts their best foot forward and says, this is why you should vote for me. And anybody who starts trashing the other folks and saying that's not why, this is why you shouldn't vote against them, it just doesn't work as well. I mean,
that's
just the bottom
line.
It just doesn't work as well. Phil, thanks a lot, and congratulations to Santa Fe. And tip of the hat to all our listeners there at KTRC in Santa Fe. Coming up tomorrow, Thursday, on the Tom Hartman Program, Ha-Joon Chang, the author of the brilliant new book, Bad Samaritans, The Myth of Free Trade and Secret History of Capitalism, is going to join me to talk about his book, which is our BuzzFlash.com book of the month. And I'll be talking with CIA counterterrorism expert Michael Scheuer about his experiences as a former chief of America's rendition program and his new book, Marching Toward Hell, America and Islam After Iraq. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it! See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.